Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'd like to just call him our general insider because he is our Pirates insider now, of course, but still a little dabbling being done with some Penguins-related stuff. That would be Jason Mackey, of course. Hello, Jason.
Hi, Chris. What's going on, buddy?
Nothing, man.
It's Chris, been... dropped my intro music, by the way. What is going on?
We could have played like California Uber Alice or something else by the Dead Kennedys if you'd have preferred.
That was too deep of a cut.
That was too deep of a cut, even for my absurd standards of inside baseball here. Speaking of, you've got a guy that's making his home debut, and maybe if Mitch Keller had been better in starts one and two, there would be more buzz. But I'm wondering if you think there's going to be like a sense of almost foreboding, wondering if this guy's going to get into big trouble before people are in their seats again tonight.
Well, if the Pirates went with a strategy where they didn't have Mitch Keller pitch until about the second or third inning, I'm not sure I could blame him. That's in trouble early on in games. But I don't know. I hope there's not a sense of dread if for no other reason than they're playing the godforsaken Detroit Tigers tonight who aren't good. It's an interesting story, though, Chris, with Mitch Keller tonight. You know, I don't want to say he's like pitching for his major league life because I think that's way overstating it. But, you know, Steven Brault's actually got a pretty good handle on his rotation spot, looked good the last time through. And, you know, you're getting Trevor Williams back tomorrow. There may be actually as crazy as this sounds if they get Jordan Lyles back in short order, not a spot or a need for Mitch Keller. But I think it would be very interesting, too, if he went out and threw a pretty good game tonight.
Do you think that it's fair to say that maybe there's more riding for Neil Huntington and his development staff and maybe Ray Searidge, too, on this Keller start? Only because so much of the chatter, and I don't think it's just us in Sports Talk, Jason, drumming it up here. I think it's legitimate among fans, is about, do the Pirates do a good job of getting the most out of their young guys? And do the Pirates do a good job of strategizing properly with young pitchers?
Well, Chris, I think it's certainly fair to ask those questions. I'm just not ready to ask them based on his start tonight. Like, if he goes out and throws 7 shutout innings, I'm not going to say that the Pirates and Neil Huntington do a great job of developing young players. Like, you know, there have still been misses. They still haven't drafted probably as well as you would have liked. By the same token, like if Mitch Keller struggles tonight, I'm not going to sit here and say that he's not a good pitcher. He very well could be. But I think the commentary, or maybe where the direction of this thing should go is, you know, did they promote Mitch Keller at the right time? Is he ready, or would he benefit from going back and saying like, okay, let's just pump the brakes big time on this whole major league experiment thing? Like, I don't, maybe you feel differently, Chris. I don't have a real good handle on where this kid is. Like, is he ready to come up and pitch in the major leagues, or is he still a ways off? Maybe we should have listened to Neil Huntington when he talked about this third pitch not having a good enough feel for it. I think a lot of people probably thought that was fluff, and I think there might be some legitimacy to it. Well, but that's what this start tonight's going to tell me.
Jason Mackey, the Post-Gazette, our Pirates, and still moonlighting at times as our Penguins insider here. Talking Pirates, though, right now. My rebuttal to you about that third pitch would be, and I know, Tyler, I know you cannot compare one player to another. Everybody is different. The mental makeup is different. Tyler Glasnow is doing pretty well with, generally speaking, two pitches for Tampa. Four seams up in the zone, you know, his breaking ball down in the zone or in the dirt. And to me, like, the third pitch, I don't know. You ask me what I see with Mitch Keller or what I think the guy is so far. I looked at a guy that struck out the first 12 hitters he faced in AAA, and I sort of answer it that way. Is he a guy that really can learn more at that level when he's capable of doing that to those hitters? Like, that's where I get with
sorry,
this.
Let me jump.
No. That's where I go with it, though.
Yeah, and I think that's completely fair. But I think if we're going to look at Glasnow, like, just look at the situation in a vacuum, I think what Glasnow has going for him or had going for him was two really good pitches. If you have two really good pitches, I think it's okay. I think Mitch Keller maybe has, like, 1.25 right now. You know, and that's not an indictment on Mitch Keller. Just like, look at his two starts. The control hasn't been what it needs to be at this level. And yeah, I mean, I think the third pitch would help if it was just another available option. But I mean, what I've seen, I don't think this is going to be a long-term thing, but I look at Mitch Keller and just say, like, the command and control is not where it needs to be, especially not in the first inning for this kid to get out.
Time is 3:06. Time brought to you by Weather Seal Home Services. Just $1 down can get you new windows. Talking a little Pirates with Jason Mackey, the Post-Gazette, here on the PM team. What do you make of this team right now at 32-39? Because I'll lay out my cards here very bluntly or very heavily on the table. I'll smack down my cards. They can say all they want. They're getting healthy. It's been a pitch here or a pitch there. They essentially are chalking this up to injuries and bad luck. I feel like this team, Jason, if I had to pick one or the other, they're closer to a contender or closer to a rebuild candidate. I would pick the latter of those two. What sense do you get about them right now?
Well, Chris, I agree with you first off that I think they're closer to a rebuild, but I don't think that's what they think. And that's obviously the most important aspect of it. Like, do I think this team can rattle off, and Huntington kind of alluded to this on his radio show on Sunday, like, can they rattle off 7 straight wins and maybe get back at 500 or something like that? Yeah, I think this team's capable of it. I think it has the pitching. Here's the question I ask, though. Are they capable of rattling off another 7-game winning streak or 8-game winning streak in quick succession and getting like 7 or 8 games over and contending? I don't see that part of it happening. And so, I mean, are we battling here to, like, be bobbing up and down at 500 and to just say, like, we're kind of respectable? Or are they really trying to compete for a world championship either this year or maybe 2 years down the road? I think it's the latter. I'm with you. So I'm looking at it like, what are we doing here? I mean, why not take a critical look at, do we need 5 outfielders or can we flip one of them for a prospect? You know, do we try to get something for somebody like Starling Marte, who's probably marketable at this point? And to me, that's your answer. Like, yes, I think some injuries and, you know, underperformance have kind of dealt them a tough hand this season. But I don't think they're a bad ball club, but I don't think they're a World Series contender either.
Jason Mackey of the Post-Gazette joining us here. You do chats, right, with the readers of the PG still? I'm just blanking on it. So my reason for asking that is you talk to the people. You're not just embedded in there with the team. I mean, you're talking to the masses about the Pirates. My sense is that the average baseball fan in this town, and I'm not speaking for all of them, but that on balance, people are shrewd enough and savvy enough about the financial realities of the game to understand, especially when they see the Brewers pull this off, that tearing the thing down more or less and committing that, we're going to be pretty bad for a couple of years here to in service of being very good very soon. Like, we're not going to go halfway and try to be an 85-win team. We want to build a 95-win team. I think people understand that dynamic and are, if it's at least explicitly stated, okay with it. Do you agree with that? That the people you talk to seem to understand that might be how you have to do things if you're a smaller market team?
Yeah, I don't think people, at least, you know, what I've heard in chats and via my email inbox, which is always a fun place and whatever, like, I don't think people would have a problem with it if you're just, like, owning what you are and you're saying, you know, we've got some good young pieces, and you can build it around Bell and Newman and Brian Reynolds. And, you know, I think there's a lot of attractive parts to this ball club. But I think, you know, what you're seeing with, you know, the Astros, or you brought up Milwaukee, I think both are good examples. Like, you need to be in a definitive direction. And I'm not sure that the Pirates have that. And I think that ticks people off as much as anything, that they're not really in or out. They're kind of both. You know, if I would liken them to an NHL team, I did this with somebody the other day. Like, they almost strike me as like the Philadelphia Flyers. Right, they're a little bit of this, they're a little bit of that, they're not enough of one thing. I don't care what sport it is, like, you need to get on the same page, going a definitive direction. And if the Pirates would do that and say, you know what, we don't feel like we can contend, I think people, even if you didn't like it, you have to at least respect, like, that's what you're doing as an organization. And I think the problem the Pirates are up against here is, you know, how many times have you heard that? It's not the first time. And so that's why people are going to get irritated, the ones that do. But, I mean, if you look at objectively what is probably necessary right now, to me, that's it.
Ray Searidge was on our postgame with Dan Zangrilli and Jack Sorensic after Chris Archer's start on Sunday against the Marlins. And there was an exchange, and I don't have time to play it all for you, Jason, but essentially he said, I'm not telling Chris to throw all these two-seamers. And there were some criticisms, it sounded like, very – not, you know, with kid gloves. It wasn't like I challenge you to a duel type stuff. But it was the pitching coach being pretty critical of the pitcher and suggesting that the pitcher's infatuation with the two-seam fastball, something that fans have kind of groused about for years, why do the Pirates always ask their guys to throw this, was his and his alone and not Searidge's directive. What's your read on the relationship between those two right now?
I haven't been around here long enough to sit here and levy a deep opinion on those two. I would feel like I'd be being irresponsible if I said, like, Archer didn't like Searidge or Searidge didn't Archer or something.
Do you sense that, though, there's dissatisfaction? Like, that there's like a toughness in communication here or difficulty communicating?
Well, and the second part of what I was going to say, Chris, is I did hear Ray Searidge's comments. I've heard Archer speak after his recent starts. I've looked at, you know, every available number and usage and seeing what Chris Archer is doing. And I don't like what he's doing. And I sort of understand. I think they're in a real weird place right now where I think Archer probably thinks he needs to pitch a certain way to make his bosses happy. I think his bosses aren't necessarily thrilled with the way he's been pitching. Like, to me, we need to kind of dial it back here and think, okay, what does Chris want to do? Like, if I was Ray Searidge right now, I would sit him in a room and say, how can you best attack hitters? Because I feel like the Pirates, for whatever reason, and I think there's blame on both sides, have gotten away from that with Chris Archer. Like, you can look at his sinker usage, his slider usage, how much he's throwing two-seamers, where he's throwing them, if he's nibbling. Like, they've overcomplicated the entire process. Sit the dude down in a room and say, how do you want to pitch? How do we get you pitching the way you want to pitch so you can get guys out? There's a good pitcher in there. It's just both sides, I think, have kind of bungled this process.
A couple more minutes with Jason Mackey, and we switch gears really fast to the Penguins. Olli Määttä traded to Chicago. They needed desperate help on their blue line because it stinks. Dominic Cahoon is the return, and I had Pierre McGuire on yesterday, who, of course, knew, like, literally everything about Dominic Cahoon, like, had practically a scouting report going back to age 11. Just the principle, though, of the trade, a defenseman going out who had a pretty hefty contract, relatively speaking, for a cheap winger under control. You like it or love it or something that's not as positive?
Yeah, I mean, I like the trade. I don't love it just for the fact that, you know, I like Olli Määttä a lot. He was always one of the friendliest Penguins to deal with. I think he was a huge part of their cup teams, and he gets badly sort of overlooked in all of it. But I understand why it happened from a business standpoint. I expected it to happen. I like Dominic Cahoon as a player. He's played with skilled people. I think he can fit in very well with the Penguins. You know, I heard his preference that he wants to play he didn't explicitly say it, but it sounds like he might slot better on the right side. When I heard that, I thought, okay, I mean, we all know there's a secondary move coming here. Like, if they end up getting rid of Kessel, which I still believe they're possibly going to do, I understand everything Rutherford's saying. He usually says it when he doesn't do something to blow smoke. But if Kessel's not on this team, if they save the money, if Dominic Cahoon slots into one of those top nine right wing spots, I think there's a great possibility here. It makes all the sense in the world from a business standpoint, too.
Lastly and quickly, Jason, you got this report from Bob McKenzie that the cap might only go up about $2 million, if that, and there's some consternation about that among front offices in the NHL. If that happens, how badly could that hamstring Jim Rutherford's offseason efforts?
I think it just depends on what else Jim is able to do to free up some cap space. I don't think it would completely crush him, because I think, you know, basically his only additional order of business is to try to extend Matt Murray, and I think some of that depends on if he's able to move on from Kessel and whatever. But if it's only $2 million, Chris, just to keep my answer on the short side, I don't think it does a lot to make a huge difference for him.
Well, if you've got an extra minute, because I know you've got to run, and I appreciate you pinch-hitting for yourself a little bit early today. If you've got an extra minute, I'll take it for your extended thoughts on the matter. I was trying to be courteous here.
Okay. All right. I have a tendency to blab. I just didn't want to blab.
It when you blab. My God. I'm on my own. I'm talking to an empty chair where Ron Cook sat. The chair doesn't talk back.
It's not going to screw Jim. It's just not. He freed up more money than I think people maybe realize with the Olli Määttä deal, and I would not think that he's done. You know, you saw Jack Johnson's name tangentially linked in the Wild deal, and I think he did refute that, Jim did, with Pomp and Cookie. But, I mean, if they can get another defenseman out, there's certainly a need for it. If you can get out from under that contract. There are certain things money-wise they can do to move things around. Jim is not in cap hell as much as people might want to say, like, this guy's bumping his head on the ceiling. He's not. An extra $2 million would be great, but I don't think it's going to drastically change his plans. And honestly, from everything I've understood coming out from there, if they went back at this with the same exact team, I think they'd be perfectly fine with it. And right now, he's okay.
Well, I could say a lot about that last statement. because I did to start the show, but we'll leave that for another day, Jason. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Chris. Have a good one.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.